Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey, friends, and welcome to this episode of Now Hear This, Canby. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. Now Hear This, Canby, in partnership with the Canby Education Association, CTV Channel 5, and other local organizations, will present a series of impartial community forums later this month engaging with all 8 candidates for the Canby School Board. These forums are intended as a service to both the community and the candidates themselves, offering an opportunity for candidates to connect with voters at a time when traditional campaigning may be more difficult due to the continuing pandemic. Spanish translation for each forum will be available through Zoom, courtesy of Bridging Cultures Canby. Additional support for this event comes from the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce and the Oregon School Employees Association. Each candidate will be asked the same questions covering subjects such as their own qualifications and vision for the district, education during the pandemic, school funding, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Due to the scheduling challenges, these question and answer forums will take place over the course of 3 evenings, starting at 6:30 p.m. each night. These forums are scheduled for Monday, April 19th, Tuesday, April 27th, and Wednesday, April 28th. The forums will be broadcast live on CTV and the Canby Currents Facebook page. For additional information, please visit our website at canbyfirst.com. All open burning is closed in the Canby Fire District and neighboring areas until further notice, as several large brush fires have broken out in the wake of unusually high winds and temperatures this week. The vegetation fires kept crews from Canby, Malala, Clackamas, Colton, and others busy throughout Tuesday, including one in the 12,400 block of South Molino Road near Lady Lane Farm, and another in the 24,900 block of South Central Point Road near Keystone Quarry. The cause of both fires was open burning, and high wind speeds contributed to the spread of the fires, Canby Fire Chief Jim Davis said. Firefighters had to fight these fires in steep terrain for over 4 hours. At the same time, Aurora Fire, Malala Fire, Clackamas Fire, Colton Fire, and Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue were either assisting or dealing with large brush events of their own. Have you seen the weather this week? Malala Fire asked on Facebook Monday. It's going to be gorgeous. But with that comes the increase in the possibility of brush fires. It only takes a few hours of sun to dry out those dead grasses. Davis said the burn ban will be in effect for the Canby Fire District throughout at least April 20th, when officials will reevaluate. A countywide burn ban was implemented Tuesday, joining Washington, Marion, and Yamhill counties. For the latest information, call the Canby Burn Line at 503-266-1195. Or visit canbyfire.org/burn-information or contact your local fire district. To report a smoke complaint or illegal burning, you can call the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality at 888-997-7888. When agricultural, backyard, and recreational open burning resumes, fire officials remind everyone to always have tools and water on site and never leave burn piles unattended. An Oregon City police officer has been awarded the Distinguished Service Medal for his work in hunting down and breaking up a fraud ring linked to nearly 40 victims, including some Clackamas County residents who had been impacted by the destructive wildfires last September. The case began when Officer Danny Garrett found an unoccupied stolen vehicle while on patrol in October 2020. During an inventory of the car, he found a significant number of stolen passports, social security cards, checkbooks, birth certificates, and pieces of mail. Garrett connected the stolen vehicle to a suspect in Oregon City, and a later search of their apartment yielded a computer and other devices being used to print fraudulent checks, the Oregon City Police Department says. The officer obtained a search warrant for the computer and found further evidence of identity theft and fraud, according to the OCPD. From there, Garrett conducted an extensive investigation, ultimately linking the suspect's criminal activity to a series of burglaries that occurred in southern Clackamas County while residents were evacuated due to the Labor Day wildfires. In the course of his investigation, Garrett uncovered a fraud ring that included at least 37 victims in Clackamas County, Salem, Gresham, West Linn, Texas, and Nebraska. OCPD says Garrett continued his regular duties as a patrol officer and field training officer while conducting the complex investigation over several weeks, seeing the case through to its conclusion rather than dumping it on detectives. Garrett's hard work resulted in the arrest of the suspect at the center of the fraud ring, 30-year-old Oregon City resident Morgan Rain LeClaire, who faces more than a dozen criminal charges, including identity theft, possession of a stolen vehicle, mail theft, and forgery. Fraud cases are often tedious and require extensive follow-up, a release from Oregon City Police Department said. Officer Garrett showed tenacity and determination, bringing closure to numerous victims of identity theft. If you ever had doubts about the toughness of Canby athlete and amateur MMA fighter Bjorn Leighton, I think it's safe to say you can lay those to rest. The absolute warrior battled for a near full minute in his MMA debut in Great Falls, Montana Saturday night, despite breaking both bones in his right forearm in a freak accident 15 seconds into the round. Leighton, a standout for the Canby High swim team before graduating in 2019, became interested in MMA in his junior year and decided to begin training last summer during the onset of the pandemic, when the immediate future for most sports appeared quite uncertain. "I started training when I did because things weren't normal," Leighton told Now Hear This Canby. "I was starting to get really, really lazy, and I had the perfect excuse to just stay home and play video games and eat all day. But I knew that when I wanted to fight, and there was no way I could live with myself every day, knowing that I was doing nothing when I knew I could be making progress towards something bigger." That drive was on full display as he entered the ring Saturday night, where Leighton was slated to face takedown specialist Brian Waddle from Mercenary Combat Academy in Kennewick, Washington. Leighton planned to try to keep his distance from his more seasoned opponent early on. His mistake came when he attempted a body kick, which Waddle caught and began to initiate one of his signature takedowns. "Oh, it happened really fast," Leighton recalled. "He's a really good wrestler, and he's got some pretty advanced throws. This was a throw I hadn't seen very often, and there were multiple parts to it. I was reacting properly to what he was trying to do at first, but then it caught me by surprise." Waddle completes the brutal maneuver, which Leighton accidentally landed on his outstretched right arm. "I heard it break and I felt it break," he said with a chuckle, sitting in a hospital bed in Montana Sunday afternoon. "But I knew the ref hadn't seen it yet, so I decided to keep the elbow nice and tight as much as I could. My plan was to get up, break his grips, maybe get a little bit of space, and just start throwing as hard as I could with my left hand." The remainder of the bout is grueling to watch as Leighton battles gamely with only three working limbs, his right forearm flopping unnaturally at times. "Yes," Leighton said when he asked if he was in pain, "but if I was able to knock him out before they saw it, I would still get the win. And if I can get the win, I am going for the win." After a couple more takedowns, the ref finally noticed his injury and stopped the match. Leighton's coach, Chris Sunshine Lencioni, a professional MMA fighter and owner of Sunshine Athletics in Canby, drove him to the hospital. Surgeons set Leighton's arm, and he appears headed for a full recovery. Typically, he can't wait to begin training again, and he and Lencioni are already planning a workout regimen focused on legs and conditioning until the cast comes off. Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Reif and Hunsicker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. The injury-depleted Canby Cougar football squad wrapped up its historic COVID-shortened season in Southern Oregon Friday with a 20-14 loss at Crater High School. The Cougs hit the field without senior receiver and return specialist Chance Miller, who is committed to the U.S. Air Force Academy, senior running back Tyler Meade, one of the league's leading rushers in rushing yards with 534 and touchdowns, 9, and starting quarterback Mikey Gibson. Despite the injury report, Canby showed tremendous heart and battled until the final down, coming up just short of a potential game-tying touchdown. On a 4th-and-2, the Cougars failed to convert with less than a minute left. "Really proud of how this group fought and played all night," said Coach Jimmy Joyce. "Guys really stepped up, especially quarterback Zach Markell. He managed the game and led two important scoring drives right at the end, but we came up just short." Even with the shortened schedule, the Cougs finished with 3 wins, one more than the team had managed in its 2 previous seasons combined. Even though the playing season was only 6 weeks, our season actually started in early July when we couldn't even share a football, Joyce said. "Through all the uncertainty, this group stayed focused and ready. I think the Canby School District deserves a lot of credit for providing this opportunity when many other districts didn't." After the longest offseason in the history of Oregon prep football, the Cougs are now heading into what is likely to be the shortest one, with the start of the 2021 season just 5 months away. The Canby boys soccer team captured its lone win of the season last week, defeating Madison 4-3 at home before closing out with losses to McMinnville and North Marion, while the girls finished the season 2-5-4, the highlight being an 8-0 shellacking at Gresham on March 25th. The Canby volleyball team finished its season 6-5, with the finale being a hard-fought loss against state powerhouse Jesuit, which went undefeated, a perfect 14-0, dropping only 4 sets all season. And finally, Canby's cross-country season wrapped up with the Tri-River Conference Championship meet, where first-year runner Ashley Peterson finished 4th overall with a time of 21 minutes, 1.5 seconds to top the day's performances by the Cougars. On the boys' side, junior Tommy O'Neill grabbed first-team all-league honors as well with his 6th-place finish with a time of 17 minutes, 36.51 seconds, followed across the finish line by Maddox Oliver in 12th, Matthew Dewar in 19th, Jared Moon 24th, and Jack Joyce in 25th to round out the scores.
Hey Tyler, I was reading an article the other day and I saw that 53% of Americans say they value technology even more since the COVID outbreak.
Oh yeah, I think I saw that article in Obvious News Weekly.
Okay, you don't have to be mean.
Seriously though, it is true. I know that I can't function anymore without all of my connected devices. And I heard that DirectLink saw a huge spike in internet traffic after the stay-at-home order began last year.
Yeah, it's a good thing DirectLink works hard to provide constant, reliable broadband service even during tough weather, peak use hours, and that big jump in increased demand.
Right, and we need access to a quality connection more than ever. We're working from home, the kids are still distance learning, and I've even had a few online doctor's appointments.
Yeah, not only that, but so many of our entertainment options have gone virtual. They're streaming TV shows and movies, Zoom game nights, and online gaming, so people really need reliable internet.
Wait. With all of that extra online activity going on, don't we have to worry about usage limits and high bills from using too much data?
Come on, Tyler. How many times have we been over this? DirectLink doesn't have data caps and doesn't charge extra fees for high usage. It says so right there on their website. Visit directlink.coop today to learn more.
Hi, joining us in the Canby conversation today is JJ Stolcic. He is the Canby High School Cougar baseball coach. Hi, coach.
Hi, glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Tyler.
Absolutely. So delighted to have you on. So yeah, it is that time of year. Things are a little different than they've ever been before, but spring is definitely in the air and the baseball season has already started. It seemed like it just came really fast. Is that how it felt for you as well?
Yeah, it was kind of a, you know, whirlwind start. We have been doing a lot of stuff, you know, even from the summer, fall, you know, wintertime. You know, just workouts and, you know, getting kids prepared. But still is, you know, once that fall sports season hit, you got kids playing soccer and doing cross country and, the volleyball season and even football, you know, we had 21 guys that were still playing football for that whole week that we started essentially our tryouts and our practice. And then all of a sudden football's over and, you know, a handful of those guys go right from making a tackle Friday night or Thursday afternoon to playing in a game on Monday.
And, swinging a bat a couple days later.
Good, you know, it's good to get kids out there. And, you know, so many kids haven't had the opportunity in for so long. So I think as coaches, we've done a good job, like keeping things in perspective, things in perspective of, hey, we want to get kids playing and get them out there doing stuff, being a part of something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you would think, I want to talk, come back in a little bit and talk a little bit more kind of about the summer and that preparation, that anticipation. But you know, just as a segue, you go from football season to baseball, this like no off season at all for some of those players. You would think that, you know, that'd be a little draggy or it would take a little bit. You had this huge just offensive outburst in your first game. I had to double check the score, 21-3.
Yeah. Yeah. Varsity alone, I think we had, you know, six or seven guys come right from, you know, football to baseball. And a lot of those kids have played a lot of baseball, you know, growing up, and, you know, a lot of them made it to our fall stuff, but still it is an adjustment. Baseball, you know, it's a tough sport. Seeing, you know, live pitching is something, you know, arguably the hardest thing to do in sports. So hit that ball moving and they're spinning it. And so it takes time. You know, that was a good matchup for us. Game one, they were, you know, a little inexperienced. But we kind of did what we needed to do. We had some good pitching on the mound, sound defense, and we had some good at bats. But it's going to take, you know, for all the kids, just seeing that live pitching, it's going to be, you know, well, I don't even know if we'll never probably reach the full potential with how short the season is. You know, throughout, our goal is just to be as good as we can by, you know, May 22nd, which is our last possible date to play. But it was quite the quick transition for those guys. And they competed. I mean, I can speak for sure for like the Langdale boys. You know, they play their game, drive home, get home at 3:30 in the morning. They get there at 9 o'clock to help with youth tryouts, have some energy, and then they go right to their job, and they're filling bags of rock. And then the next day we have practice. I mean, they're there every day, not acting tired, getting after it. So that's been cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk to you as a coach and kind of hear how you're approaching this. I'm always interested to hear from coaches. Obviously you're a coach of a sport. You're there to kind of teach that sport and improve in the goals of that athletic event as much as you can. But I know coaches and many of you are teachers as well. You're also interested in these, your players as people and as growing people and teaching them things about life and about, you know, challenges they might face even off the field or the court. So I'm curious kind of how you're approaching that aspect of this season with it being so different, with there not being sort of the gold star of statewide playoffs, you know, for this season. That's usually something that I know is a big carrot out there. So how are you kind of approaching that aspect, sort of just not just improving swings, but kind of those other aspects?
Yeah. Well, first, our athletic director, you know, did a good job laying it out to all the, you know, coaches. We had our meeting of like, hey, number one goal, get kids competing again, play all your games, you know, and with that, that's, you know, obviously that's, you know, we're at the mercy of who gets, if someone team pops up with COVID, you know, you're kind of in that, but, you know, in his way of saying is like, we got to follow the protocols the best we can. So we give ourselves a chance to, play as many games as possible. And then just, you know, like I said, keep as many kids out there interested. So with that being said, that kind of set the tone for us. And then, you know, for us, we talk every year, whether it's COVID year or non-COVID years, like, you know, the character the kid has is going to be way more important than, you know, their batting average. We talked just the other day about, you know, you're going to forget what some kid's batting average was or ERA was, but you're going to remember how they treated you. And I think if you're only focused on the wins, the losses, the, you know, the numbers aspect of it, I think you lose out on the most important part. Last 3 or 4 years, we've really tried hard. You know, we get kids in the classroom during lunchtime. We set up like our core values, and the kids choose, hey, this is what we're about. You know, it's so like for us, selfless, which is essentially we is greater than me, excellence, being at your best at all times, and then inspire, you know, like how can I help someone else do something that they didn't think they were able to do. So that's something we hit on. And that is, you know, by far, way more important than the swing. All that stuff will come, you know, and we do work on that. Yes. But we do hit home like, hey, this is most important. When you leave here, want to be a great father, you know, great husband, someone in the community and society that's going to, be a positive influence in other people. And to me, it's not just show, you know. I think you got to do it and you got to live it every day. You can't just be a piece of paper. Something you got to talk about.
Yeah.
And have those conversations with kids.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Coach, character conversations in a difficult year like this, with COVID, where you weren't even sure if you were going to have a season at some points, and where there's challenges in so many other aspects of life for our young people as well. Easier or harder to have those character conversations?
I think you always got to have like your standards, and you keep your core values, whether you're in a COVID year or non-COVID year. And you know, we're all going through something maybe a little different. We don't see the kids as much. You don't know exactly what's going on at home as much, but still it's just, you still got to kind of dig in and ask the kids, you know, and you have that private conversation on the side of, hey, I noticed this, how are you feeling? And you still try to get it out of them, but you still got to teach the, you know, our goal in a COVID year, non-COVID year is we want to make you a better person. And that's not going to change.
Yeah. What's the feeling from you coaches? I know you're a pretty tight knit group. What's the feeling for you to be able to do what you love as a coach and to be able to have a season, even in this unusual circumstances?
Sure. Yeah. It was, you know, last year when it gets, taken away, and I was like, you know, didn't really know what to expect. I was like, okay, we're off for 2 weeks. Then I started planning. Here's what'll happen when you come back. And then as time went on, you just think, okay, maybe it's a month. And then you finally realize like, shoot, we're not going to have a season. And then they start pushing it off even more. And you're just like, okay, see, kind of had to readjust. And it took me a long time. I don't even think I ever really fully adjusted to it. It was awesome. We got to do stuff in the summer again. You know, I know all the coaches, like you said, all of us, communicate, sharing athletes, you know, we know there's a weird times and, you know, like right now, you know, guys are probably coming to baseball then right after going and playing basketball. And in the past I think we've done a good job too, still sharing, but hey, you know, right now priority is this sport, but with kids not doing something for so long, we just got together and just like, hey, we got to share, you know, do the best we can. And if kids want to do it, I'm not going to pressure them into it, but hey, kid wants to go play basketball after practice, go play basketball. I mean, be a kid. They kind of got robbed of, you know, quite a while of, you know, probably, you know, some of your best times in your life when you're a high school kid. So I think all the coaches, you know, it was fun watching football get going and soccer and volleyball. And they kind of set the tone for us. And it was, hopefully we carried over. Then we moved to that fourth season eventually. And it's just like, you know, stuff that, you gotta keep kids competing and watching. It's fun.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me of that, Coach. I it's been so long. It's so much has happened. Yeah. I totally forgot. So yeah, when the initial school closure happened, we were in the middle of what was the winter spring sports season, or not in the middle. We were almost at the end of it, I should say. So when that kept getting pushed back, like you say, you guys never even had a season. That must have been excruciating to go through for you and your players.
Yeah. You know, we were, at our Friday, right before we were supposed to play our first contest on Monday, and the Friday before it got shut down. And it, you know, it was a tight, super tight knit group. And it was, you know, going to be an exciting time. And then we had a retreat planned, with some games over spring break, and, you know, you just kind of get told like, oh, it's not going to happen. So that was a blow. And then eventually big blow, you know, and selfishly, I think, you know, it was obviously a blow for me, but I felt, you know, more is more for the kids. You know, I have my playing time's done. Obviously I love coaching, but trying to give those kids that experience, and that's one they'll never, you know, they'll never get. But, you know, it's hard for the parents too. You don't get that closure, you know, that you've watched your kid play since they were five, and now you're your last, you know, you don't get that, you know, you don't get that last experience. So that was not just baseball, you know, softball as well, and tennis and track. That was tough. But, you know, long-term, those kids will, you know, they have a story to tell, and they have something that I think hopefully will make them tougher in the long run.
Yeah. I'm sure it will. But yeah, I mean, a true casualty of these times. I mean, obviously football, the other sports seasons this year were way pushed, forward. We're doing football in March. It was so weird, but they happened, right? I mean, at that end of last year, you know, those kids never could and never will be able to get that back. So how did you coach and your other coaches for the baseball team stay connected with your players, kind of try to keep them encouraged over the summer? You mentioned you're able to do some stuff. Did you early on, were you sort of sending them workouts or just kind of encouraging them to stay in shape as best they could in the hopes that something would eventually come back?
Yeah, early on, it was super tough. We had pretty tight restrictions district-wide. Like, we couldn't use Zoom. We couldn't meet, you know, like we couldn't do this face-to-face thing on the computer. And obviously you weren't supposed to see him in person. So, you know, text message. And then one of our assistants, Coach Rhodes, he made a Google Classroom site. So we had like some drills they could do, videos they could watch. And then we did open up more towards the end. We did have like, we still had kind of a banquet. Parents were really good, sending me like some videos and photos. So we put together a slideshow for senior guys to kind of get some closures on those guys. And then when we got to like summer, you know, at first, like, hey, we'll make a short summer season. Well, then that got pushed away to now just workouts. We, you know, technically we couldn't even share baseball in the summer. So we had to get creative with that.
Right.
You know, like football guys are thrown into a net by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're hitting, but coaches are pitching with gloves on, and then coaches had to pick up all the balls, you know, but it was something. And we didn't do it every day, but it was something, you know, out there. And then we had that break in August, and then the fall was kind of almost more like a regular, you know, practice that by then we could share. We still had to sanitize things, but we could share equipment. And that was fun. You know, we had a lot of guys you hadn't seen, kids were fired up, coaches were fired up just to be around people again. So that was a lot of fun. And then it was good to see them. Hey, then they moved on to do some winter sports or fall sports. And it was good to see kids running around again.
Awesome. And then, you know, coming back to the present, I'd love to hear just a little bit more about your outlook for the season and what's sort of different about the new thing that's coming back. Obviously, you mentioned you were able to finally do practice and things like that, and that felt really good. But now it kind of the thing the kids love, real competition with other teams.
Yeah. You know, I was telling the seniors, you know, even during our workouts, it was like, you know, it was March. It was spring break, and I'm like, hey, 2 months from now, you know, you're going to be done, and we haven't even started practice, you know, so that you got to get adjusted to that. It's, you're ripping off three games a week. We're trying to figure out how we can get 21 innings covered every week with pitching. You know, that's kind of the hard part with guys,
right?
You know, not being ready to go. A couple guys with injuries coming from other sports. But, you know, again, get kids playing. You know, the last hurrah for, we have six seniors, you know, the last, some of them won't play, you know, sport again. So this is kind of their last, their last time playing baseball for sure. But just give them that opportunity, you know, have fun, be with your buddies. There are, you know, still a lot of, you know, I don't know, our game the other day, we had to be spaced out of the dugout too. So a different feel to it. The junior and senior group, we're carrying like 15 guys on the varsity squad, and, you know, those guys, a lot of baseball played together growing up, you know, so it's fun to kind of see those friendships carry over. and guys get to compete together. Overall program wise, we have, you know, big group of freshmen. I think we kept 19 kids. JV has about 15 kids on it. A lot of good kids, good attitudes. And out of all years, you know, this is a year to carry larger amount of kids. It happens so fast, you know, and it's a chance to give kids something to do, to see if they really like it and want to continue it, yeah. Especially at the lower levels. But yeah, it's going to be fun. And again, like I said, it's going to be over before we know it. So I just hope we can enjoy the time together. I don't know what to tell you, you know, I think we're going to compete in every game. Chance to be in there. We have some, you know, some top end pitching, some middle of the weight road pitching. I think we'll play pretty good defense. It'll probably come down to, you know, see how we can swing it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have some athletes that are looking to maybe continue their baseball careers? And is that something that's obviously going to look different in terms of recruiting and whatnot as well?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'd say in every sport, maybe baseball the most because of last year counting as a COVID year, you know? So like, you know, you could considerably, not many people want to do it, but you could be, you know, in junior college for like 4 years, you know, take a COVID year, you take a redshirt year, and then you play 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's tough. We have a couple guys that want to keep playing. Christian Potratz is a kid that started for us in center field as a sophomore. He's basically brings back our most of our varsity experience. And then a kid named Joey Gartrell. Joe's a kid that probably, you know, in the last 2 years has grown 4 inches and put on 40 pounds and looks totally different. And he's a guy that will play baseball in college as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was kind of thinking about this in light of my high school career, but obviously so much of this situation not ideal, but maybe a small silver lining is I can remember when I was an athlete, somebody offered like a really game heavy season and a little bit lighter on the practices. I might not have said no to that. That's sure. Kind of, you get to just play a lot of games and have fun with it. So.
And baseball is normally that sport anyways, of, you know, because it's not as, you know, physically demanding as a football game where you're running your guts out on the basketball court. You know, you're playing, you know, 3 games a week in a normal year anyways, but now it's just, you know, condensed. And, you know, if you are a freshman kid and you're trying it out and you're like, I'm not sure, this is the year to try it because it's going to be over before you know it. And you're not slugging through, you know, the late in the season.
Awesome. All right, Coach. Well, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate you taking time out. Anything else that you'd like to share with folks before they go? How can I'm not sure how it's working with attendance for spring games or for baseball. How can folks stay tuned other than following the Canby Current, obviously, for sports?
Yeah, sure. Fans are allowed at home games. You just got to be, you know, physically distanced and have the mask on. We're not currently, because of that, we're not like live streaming anything with that option there. Other than that, you know, Tyler, appreciate what you do for the community and celebrating these kids and getting these kids recognition. So thanks for having me on and thanks all that you do for kids.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Coach, and best of luck on the rest of your season.
Okay. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? We have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, we draw this episode towards a conclusion with another rendition of Can Be Then. Can Be Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily. You can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grand Street in downtown Canby, or connect with them on Facebook or through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. The story of Canby is a story about the railroad. It's quite literally true that the former would not exist without the latter, at least not in the way that we know it today. In honor and recognition of that fact, we're continuing our look back at the history of the Canby Railroad Depot, believed to be the oldest railway station still standing in the entire state of Oregon. In 1933, the depot was the site of a protest by several hundred members of what was known as the Hunger Army, a group organized by the Unemployed Party, also called the Communists, whose socialist ideals became popular with many out-of-work souls during the worst parts of the Great Depression. Armed with streaming banners approved by an organization known as the Communists, the hungry marchers arrived in Canby and took lunch on the depot grounds between the railroad track and Main Street, a newspaper recorded. The marchers are orderly American citizens and were treated as such. A later communist demonstration in Portland drew an estimated 6,000 people before the group trekked to the state capitol in Salem in a hunger march. Sadly, the depot had been the site of a number of tragic deaths over the years, one of the most infamous coming in January 1911, when beloved local residents, Mrs. W.J. Gordon, was struck and instantly killed by the 7 o'clock Shasta Limited. A lone eyewitness, a Mr. W.H. Luck, said Gordon had crossed over from her home and was walking up the tracks, quote, her mind evidently being preoccupied as she paid no attention to the oncoming train at her back. Her son, Emil Gordon, was the first one to reach the body, and it was his hand that first lifted the veil she was wearing and confirmed the victim was his own mother. The newspapers later recorded that though her skull had fractured and her face was not disfigured beyond some light bruising. Willing hands, although accompanied by aching hearts, were soon hurrying from all directions to the afflicted home, and everything that human aid could do was done to relieve the awful agony of the children, the Canby Tribune recorded. Mrs. Gordon had been a great favorite with the ladies and the young people of the town, and it seemed to those present that there was nothing they could do in spite of their anxiety to help. For many years, the workhorse on the Canby branch of the Southern Pacific Railroad was a steam-powered locomotive known as the 5021. Built in the mid-1920s, the 5021 provided passenger and freight service and ran the rails from east to west, always stopping at the Canby Depot along the way. It remained in operation until 1955. The Canby Depot served the community well over a century as it grew from a small farming town into a thriving, active city of more than 10,000 souls. The station served passengers as well as freight and even handled telegraph service. Mail came and went by steam and later diesel train under contract. Thousands of carloads of potatoes, grain, and other agricultural products from local farms went out by rail before and after World War I, when the three largest commission offices operated here. Its stationeers include Archie Markey, who served as station master for 35 years until his retirement in 1958, and Herman Bergman, longtime Southern Pacific Railroad employee who turned out the lights when the Canby Depot closed in 1975. Both were known for their many contributions to the community in which they chose to live and work. But by the late 1970s, the then 107-year-old structure had become decommissioned and was on the verge of being torn down. Fortunately, starting in 1978, a grassroots movement had started in Canby to have the depot designated a historic structure and turned into a museum. It was the brainchild of John R. Neeland, who founded the Canby Historical Society on May 15, 1968, and served as its first president, chairing meetings and organizing social events, including an annual picnic. Neeland had spent 40 years at the Canby Post Office serving as postmaster from 1959 until his retirement in August 1974. His mother, Anna Louise Hafes Nyland, who had been known and beloved across town as the owner and proprietor of the Maple Corner Restaurant. He volunteered his time to seek out old, forgotten photographs of historic significance to Canby from families, estates, and charities. Sadly, Neyland died in 1982, just a few years before seeing his dream of a local history museum housed in the restored Canby Railroad Depot could come to fruition. The movement also included members of the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce and other community organizations with assistance and support from the Canby City Council, which was tasked with seeking a historic designation for the building and Clackamas County. A Save the Depot committee headed by a local historian, Myra Weston, was formed to raise money to move and restore the historical building. The effort received more than $20,000 in private contributions, along with donated materials and services and a $20,000 community development block grant. The group also used materials from a 1907 warehouse addition to repair and restore the tattered depot. It took 5 years, but the group eventually raised enough to remove, renovate, and relocate the aging structure 3/4 mile down Northwest First Avenue to its new home near the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, a journey that took almost an hour. The rechristened Canby Depot Museum was dedicated in October 1986, with Bergman serving as Master of Ceremonies and Marquis, who, by then, was 98 years old, in attendance. Well, friends, that'll do it for another episode of Now Hear This Canby. I'm your host, James Walton. As always, thank you for listening and have a great day.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hare. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.